Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Priya Patel for petitioner Gustavo Navichoke, who's watching the live stream with his wife and children. And I'll aim to reserve 2 minutes for
rebuttal. I'm having some trouble hearing you. I'm not hearing you exactly, but hearing what you're saying as articulation. Nobody.
Oh, I apologize. I'll aim to speak clearly. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're asking the court to correct two of the board's errors made below. First, the credibility finding. And second, they're finding that the Guatemalan government would not acquiesce to Mr. Navichoke's torture. Now, as to the credibility finding, the government isn't defending this finding at all, and they're conceding that reconsideration is necessary, essentially conceding that neither basis that the board cites is supported by substantial evidence. Now, both of the bases that the board cites, Mr. Navichoke's use of the false identity prior and his conviction for an offense that he didn't commit, Mr. Navichoke proffered reasonable and plausible explanations for both of these discrepancies, and the board erred because it failed to provide any reason, let alone a specific and a cogent one, before rejecting these explanations. Now the board, on top of these two errors, further erred by affirming the credibility finding without even mentioning, let alone considering, the 6 pieces of non-testimonial evidence in this case that verified Mr. Navichoke's account of torture. And this violated both the Real ID Act and this court's precedent that says that the agency can't selectively examine evidence determining credibility, but instead it has to present a reasoned analysis of the evidence as a whole. And here, again, we have 6 pieces of non-testimonial evidence in the record. We have the Guatemalan police report, which confirms that Mr. Navichoke and the others in the committee were threatened by MS-13. We also have in the record at 131 and 32, Mr. Navichoke showing scars that he sustained after he was tortured, including an injury on his finger and a scar on his face where he says MS-13 cut him. We have 3 witness declarations in the record, each of which are consistent with each other and detailed, corroborating Mr. Navichoke's account. One of these declarations
said the credibility finding was based primarily on what he said about his prior conviction and the fact that they had a police report to the contrary. So there are contention that that should just be disregarded or that it's not really a conflict.
Well, Your Honor, he gave an explanation, and under this court's precedent, the agency was required to give a specific and a cogent reason for rejecting the explanation, and they didn't. They affirmed the IJ's finding, and the IJ said, I'm just going to accept the police report instead of his testimony. And so the IJ was required to give a reason for rejecting the explanation, but on top of that, the IJ looked at this in a vacuum, and he didn't consider at all these pieces of evidence that I'm beginning to explain that are significant, because they do.
And apparently he did not, in fact, plead guilty, which is what they kept saying.
That's correct, Your Honor. He pled no contest, which, as this court has held, does not mean that the person is admitting to having committed the crime. And so, in addition to the...
We shouldn't go to the rest of the case and then see what the government has to say. It hasn't pleaded. It's asked for a remand. It's done this a couple times, actually, in this calendar on credibility issues, which is a little odd because I'm not sure why the BIA gets 2 shots at it, but I'd like to hear what they have to say about it. So, because they haven't defended it, you're right, and if they're really not going to defend it, we don't even need to decide it. So, the question is, what about the rest of the case?
That's correct, Your Honor. We would agree that this record does compel concluding that he's credible. And so I'll move on then to the Convention Against Torture finding. And this is where the board affirmed the IJ's finding that Mr. Navichoke didn't establish government acquiescence. And here the police response in this case shows that the agency's finding is completely unsupported by substantial evidence. Because after Mr. Navichoke was kidnapped and tortured, the police said, stop filing reports because it puts us at risk. And this is textbook acquiescence. At minimum, failing to even mention this warrants reversal, as this court has made clear in cases like Akusong and D.S. Reynoso, which we submitted the 28J letters for, and Afridi and Umanzer Aguilar, which we cite to in the brief. These are all cases where the court reversed because the agency didn't consider the police's refusal to intervene. Now, the government, in their briefing, they try to cabin the fact that the police refused to take a report as mere police ineffectiveness. And they cite to Barajas Romero, which says, yes, police ineffectiveness isn't enough, absent evidence of other inability or unwillingness to oppose their criminal organization or evidence of corruption. And that's exactly what we have here. We have the police repeatedly unwilling to investigate despite Mr. Navichokia's reports, and then ultimately saying, we're not even going to accept a report because it puts us at risk. And then on top of that, we have widespread country evidence, widespread country conditions evidence of corruption. And the board mentions the country conditions, and it says we can't extrapolate acquiescence from it. But this, too, is completely unsupported by the record because the evidence... So,
Ms. Patel, sorry to interrupt, but tell me what evidence there was that the country conditions had changed.
Well, the country conditions shows that there is still widespread corruption as it relates to complicity with gang violence. And I can point the court to at least 10 sites in the record that show that make this connection, that corruption leads to prolific gang violence and that the two are actually intertwined. Just an example at 606, there's an Insight Crime report that says the high level of organized crime in Guatemala is largely thanks to a permissive and often complicit police force, and criminal groups work closely with sectors of the government that facilitate their business. And that's just one example, Your Honor. And so this country conditions evidence is, it not only documents widespread corruption, but also complicity with gang activities. And this court recently in a case called Joshua Jaimes, which we submitted the 28J for, said that evidence demonstrating this kind of corruption is probative acquiescence, especially when you couple it with instances of prior police acquiescence. And so just like in Joshua Jaimes, this court has a record that compels concluding that the Guatemalan government would acquiesce to Mr. Navichokia's torture. And for that reason, we're asking for reversal and a finding so stating. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Fryer.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Allison Fryer for the Attorney General. In this case, the adverse credibility determination is not necessary to decide the case. The particularly serious crime finding is determinative of Mr. Navichokia's applications for withholding of removal, and he has completely waived those by failing to mention them in his brief. In fact, today at argument, Mr. Navichokia listed.
But as to the credibility finding, it's only not necessary if we affirmed on the other issue. I mean, if we denied the petition on the other issue, which you say we should, but it's also true that some of what he said as to acquiescence wasn't even mentioned by the BIA, and that makes you think they weren't really crediting him, even in the alternative. But leaving that aside, it doesn't, I mean, you can't throw the towel on the credibility unless that's what you want to do. And in other words, we may not agree with you on the other issue. Then what?
If the court rules that the petitioner did not waive the particularly serious crime finding and...
No, I'm not talking about the particularly serious crime finding. The pad issue, though, was an alternative ruling, and we could not agree with it. Then what?
If the court rules that the board either didn't give reasoned consideration to the evidence, or when they did, they reached a conclusion contrary to that compelled by the record, then remand would be appropriate for the board to consider the evidence in the first instance.
Why do we remand and have to do it over again?
Because the Supreme Court says that that's what's required in Ventura.
In Ventura was something they hadn't decided. Once they've decided something, do we have to have them decide it again?
Yes, it's the agency's role to look at the evidence and analyze it, especially in a case like this where the acquiescence question is one where the board gets deference. They have particular expertise.
Let's leave the acquiescence issue out. I want to know on the credibility finding, why did they get to do it again? What you think is wrong with the credibility finding, why they should get to do it again, even. But leaving that aside, suppose if you articulated the problems and said, and therefore they should be able to do it over again, maybe you need to do that, but why should they be able to do it over again? Ventura is a completely different story when they didn't decide something.
If this court rules that the record compels the conclusion that he's credible, then there would be no further role for the agency to play in that, in the credibility arena. But if the court thinks that there would be more evidence that the court needed, that the board needed to reach in the credibility arena, then remand would be appropriate. But I'm not sure that remand would be required by Ventura in the credibility context, like it would in CAT.
So assuming that he's credible, what is your position?
Assuming that he's credible, and leaving the particularly serious crime finding to the side, the government's position is that the agency gave reasoned consideration to the evidence in the record, and that evidence does not compel the conclusion that the Guatemalan authorities would acquiesce to Mr. Navechoque's torture if he experienced any upon return. The police were not as responsive as he would have liked when he reported the crimes to them, but there's no evidence that they absolutely refused to investigate or refused to do what they could.
But there is such evidence. He said that as to the threats, yes, they said everything would be fine, but they never did. As far as he knows, he didn't do anything. But as to the kidnapping, which was the actual torture, they said, don't report it anymore. Leave us out of this. We're afraid of them too, essentially. And don't come here anymore.
They did ask him to stop filing reports because they acknowledged that they were at risk too. But they, Mr. Navechoque draws from that, that they necessarily didn't investigate or wouldn't have helped him further. And I'm not sure that that's compelled by the evidence. The police were admitting that they're at risk from gangs, but that's not the same thing as what's been the case in the other cases to which petitioner cites. So in Soshua James, the police observed the petitioner being, observed the petitioner being beaten, and they stood there and observed and laughed. That's the level of acquiescence that we're talking about. The acquiescence standard for CAT is higher than the standard of unable or unwilling for asylum and withholding. It's the agency never reached that question because he was ineligible for other reasons, but the question isn't...
Hold on. So you're suggesting that the only way one could find that would be to have the police actually see the beating, or in this case, torture?
No, not at all. There are plenty of other ways that it could happen, but one of the cases petitioner was relying on for the proposition that reluctance to investigate equals acquiescence doesn't really stand for that proposition as widely as she reads it.
So where is the line then?
Well, that can be tricky, but the acquiescence is where the police know in advance or are willfully blind to something, and then they breach their legal duty to intervene. Not where they're upset that you're bothering them, not where they feel they're at risk, not where they are ineffective.
The expression, hear no evil, see no evil, they didn't see no evil, they didn't want to hear no evil either, did they? And isn't that acquiescence, counsel?
Plus, if they're afraid to even have a report, does that suggest that they're nonetheless going to go do something the next time? They're going to prevent it or something? They don't want to get involved.
I don't know. And that's not my burden to show that. Petitioner bears the burden of demonstrating the eligibility and that the record compels that conclusion. And there's no doubt that there's some evidence in this record, but not sufficient evidence to compel the conclusion of meeting the high standard of acquiescence for CAT.
But the BIA misstated the record, yes?
I don't believe so.
There are only two instances and doesn't say anything about what happened after the kidnapping.
The IJ said there were only two reports and petitioner counts it as three, but it's the IJ said two reports because two of the reports were about the same incident, about the threatening incident. Mr. Navechoque went once and then he went back a couple of days or a week later to check on it. And so the IJ counted that, it's pretty clear, about as one report based on the threats, and then one again about the kidnapping. So whereas petitioner counts three, the IJ counts two. There's no real discrepancy. And to the extent that there is, I don't think that shows that the agency wasn't paying attention to this, to the case, or not doing it properly. The board didn't mention those reports specifically because it's simply reviewing the IJ's decision. It can't find facts in the first instance. It shouldn't be doing that. And so in its review, it did not specifically mention the reports, but it's not required to. It mentioned the country conditions evidence of pervasive corruption and ruled that Mr. Navichoke had not sufficiently demonstrated a link between pervasive corruption and what he feared. He didn't even fear that the police were corrupt in his hometown specifically. The police had said to stop reporting because they were nervous, but that's not the same as corruption. So it's not clear how the evidence of corruption would link to Mr. Navichoke's personal situation from 17 years ago.
And if we thought that the BIA not in fact properly construe what the evidence was, then what?
Then remand under Ventura would be appropriate for the board to reevaluate the evidence with the benefit of this court's reading of it.
That's not right either. I mean, this is not a different issue. It's initially already decided. Ventura was a new issue that nobody had decided. And then the court went ahead and decided on its own.
Yes.
They decided this question, the acquiescence question. They just decided it with some blinkered view of what the evidence was. Why did they get to do it again? That's the part I don't get.
Because if this court were to remand on that question, then it would be because the agency didn't properly consider the evidence. So they didn't consider the evidence. So they need the opportunity to do that. That would be the role of this court, would be to remind the board that they need to look at the evidence, to point them to specific things that this court finds relevant, to read the evidence the way this court finds the record compels them to do. But they still have the expertise and deserve the deference to look at that evidence in the first instance in light of their expertise on these questions. If there are no further questions, the petition for review should be denied. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Patel, do you have anything else you want to say?
Yes, Your Honor. I won't belabor the credibility point, but we agree that INS Ventura is an opposite in this court. Does have enough in the record to compel that he's credible. Now, as to acquiescence, just a few quick points. The government seems to be reading into the acquiescence standard some sort of requirement that malfeasance is required, but that's not what this court has held. In cases like Diaz-Reynoso and Akusong, which were in our 28J letters, there the police inaction was quite similar here. The police just didn't have the resources, or the police said that they weren't able to intervene, but they were aware of.
But do you think our case law is a little muddy about whether, I had always understood, as Ms. Reyes is, that the standard of acquiescence is not the same as the unable or unwilling. But at some points, we seem to be saying that it is. I don't know if, so I don't know if you're arguing that it is the same or it's different.
That's correct. This court has at some points held that unwillingness and inability, when it's coupled with police ineffectiveness, can be enough. But I think that's different from the asylum statute, because this acquiescence piece really contemplates prior police acquiescence to torture. And so I think that's where that language comes from. But even if we disregard that language, if we look straight to the regulation or straight to the cases that interpret the regulation, the requirement is that the official be aware of an activity constituting torture, have awareness of it, which is what they had here, and then breach their legal responsibility to intervene. And that is also what we have here. We have, as this court pointed out, willful blindness to the acquiescence. And again, you don't need any sort of level of malfeasance to do that. Also just point out that the government described the discrepancy, or described the IJ's misstatements, as saying the IJ said that Mr. Navichoke twice reported. That's actually not what the IJ said. The IJ said that he twice went to the police department to report. And the record is clear here. He went to the police department three times to report. So that is a misstatement. And so if the BIA relied on that, it did so in error. And we also would just end on this note that, yes, this is a record that compels concluding acquiescence. And on top of that, there's an undisturbed past torture finding. And as this court held in Nuru, if an individual has been tortured and has been escaped, it's likely that they'll be tortured again, unless there are circumstances or conditions that have changed significantly. And this record does compel finding that there haven't been a change in circumstances, especially in light of the fact that Mr. Navichoke has a witness declaration, testimony, and a death certificate that confirm that someone who was on the committee with him was killed, murdered, just a year prior to the hearing. So if there are no other questions, I'm happy to submit.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for your useful arguments. My name is Philip, but I'm going to call it by the name that's on our calendar, which is Morales-Lopez versus Barr. He submitted. And we'll go to Andres Galeotti versus Barr.